Welcome all of you fellow arcanists out there to the Frith Guild podcast, where we explore an amazing world full of mystical creatures and their partners. Our hosts are Eric Smith and Scott Wareham, and they'll be your guides along this journey through death and dragons. So grab your eldrin, strap on your swords, and get ready to defend the Argo Empire from evil. Throughout this series, if you have not caught up to the chapters being discussed today, we urge you to hit the pause button, grab a copy of this wonderful book, and catch up. We'll be here when you get back. With the very real threat of the World Serpent looming, Volk hasn't had time to worry about the Sovereign Dragon Tournament. But worried or not, the preliminaries are over, and the tournament is here. And Addy has told Volk in no uncertain terms that she expects him to win the apprentice-level competition, and specifically to beat Zaxxas. But before we get on to the tourney, let's take a look at a piece of advice from the series. Step 15 on the Pillar of Ruma says optimism. Without it, we lose ourselves to misery. And with that, let's join Eric and Scott for chapters 31 through 35 of Colosseum Arcanist.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Frith Guild podcast, where today we'll be discussing chapters 31 through 35 of Colosseum Arcanist. Oh my goodness, we are already halfway through this book. We're just getting into the tournament in these episodes, so stick around and stay tuned. First, before we get into it, we want to thank everyone for listening. We'd like to ask if everybody show some love by liking, commenting, sharing, rating, whatever you're listening to. And if you are listening from outside of the US, I'm really, really curious to know where you're listening from. Also want to mention that the Frith Chronicles wiki link is in the description, along with the link to the Capital Station Discord server. So you can hop over there to join in on the conversation. And want to make an announcement that Crown Tournament 2 by Shami Stovall and Ryan Tang, the second in that series, is going to be released on May the 8th of 2024. So the date this episode is released, it'll be 2 weeks from that date. And without further ado, we're going to get into Chapter 31, Tournament Round 1. All right, it is tourney day. Finally starting the Pokemon League Championship.
Woo woo.
So Volk actually took the challenge from Zelfry pretty to the heart and is getting information on his own about his opponents. He brings along the book that he borrowed from the college that Thiessen wrote. They also say that the Colosseum seats about 24,000 people in general. And just for some perspective on the size of this Colosseum, and by no means calling it small, but the largest stadium is in Michigan, the Michigan Wolverines, and it can seat 107,601 fans.
And I've seen the Michigan Stadium. Even a quarter of that size is still a massive stadium.
Exactly. I couldn't imagine like seeing that huge of a stadium, even at 24,000.
And the stadium is also fitted for the games. So they brought in a gargoyle arcanist who's able to reform the arena after it gets blown to pieces during the matches. They have Caldarius Arcanist there to heal anybody who's injured. They have Encanto Arcanists who are able to put up a telekinetic barrier to protect the crowd from any stray magic or weaponry that comes away. So it is fully designed and ready for the tourney.
Oh, come on. I want to catch a hockey puck.
Except when the hockey puck's a fireball.
This is true. All right, so Volk and Luthair are underneath, and Nicolin actually mentions that it's been a while since they've seen Luthair. Nicolin does ask if Volk swept anyone off their feet, and Luthair be loyal as heck. Talking about Karna, the gala, Luthair being the gentleman that he is, says that a man does not kiss and tell. Nicolin just straight claps back with, well, Luthair is not a man. He's a sentient clothing.
Which is the best description for him that you can have.
But there's really no other way to put it. So, I mean, kudos to Nicolin for that.
Yeah, he's like Doctor Strange's cape out there. He's sentient clothing.
So Volk and Zaxxas, they get to start off with the puppy arcanist that we met earlier on in the book.
As they're announcing the tournament bracket, Volk does notice that Adelgis's brother Nero is also listed. He's fighting, and here is a Storeworm Arcanist. So more to come with more interaction on their family.
Well, and another one of the rules as far as the apprenticeship levels go is that the Arcanists are only allowed to use whatever items they specifically have made. This makes it a very difficult choice or decision, I would imagine, for the rule keeper, because technically Volk didn't make his sword. Zelfry, getting ahead of the curve, was already looking into that. And especially with Volk being second bonded, they did allow the sword because of the fact that Luthair helped with actually making the sword. So it's not necessarily wholly out of the question for Volk to keep on to it. And that means he also gets to have his mirror shield. Volk still doesn't have his pendant, which it seems like it was going to be a problem, but then Zelfry's like, yeah, bro, he's with me.
He really showed his power there.
Right, just, he's with me, you know, like, I got him.
He's my apprentice, they lose shit.
Next time we'll have to tie it onto him, make him carry a string. We find out that the Unicorn, Pegasi, and the Sovereign Dragon Trials of Worth will be conducted during this tournament as well. This is going to be basically for the Unicorn and the Pegasi, at least. This is going to be the new batch of recruits for the Sky Legionnaires and the Knights Draconic.
And it is fun because their Trial of Worth are physical challenges. So it is something where they can have it in the arena. People can come view it as sort of a side event to the tourney.
Exactly. At least in my head canon, I always thought about how, like, these Trials of Worth, they're almost mystical. Like, you don't know what it's going to be until you get there to compete against them. And granted, I don't know why I got this in my head canon, because literally in the first book, the first couple chapters were like, yeah, we know exactly what's going to happen. So I don't know. I always felt like they're like mystical.
Yeah, it does seem strange that it's almost something you could train for. Like, it's their version of an Ironman or a marathon.
Right. Like, if I could practice to become a wizard, this is how, yeah, I'm going to do it until I have to actually go. With Zaxxas and Volk, they do bring a level of conviction that is basically, like, at the same level as they were when they were confronting Callisto, because we don't like these puppy arcanists at all.
They are feisty. They get in their face. They were making fun of Karna. The whole incident with the Frithgill getting called out, they are anxious for revenge at this point.
Calling a Hexa, a Skag, and all that. Like, you don't be doing us like that. My other thing is, what does Zaxxas have in this fat pouch that he has? Like, it's literally listed as a fat pouch on his belt. What is it?
Really hoping it's not actually fat in there. He was practicing his magic tricks with his fire, so hopefully it's fire-related and not a snack for after.
Like his snack pouch that he had when he was going.
Yeah, he tucked in a little hardtack in there, and partway through he'll break it out.
Hey, what if it's Scooby Snacks?
It's going to be tough to fight after Scooby Snacks. That's all I'm saying.
This whole chapter of round one actually just is the lead up to the tournament, or the actual round itself. This leads us into chapter 32, A Message. Zaxxas starts by demanding that Volk handles the Ortheros. And it's like, wait a minute, I thought we were a team here, not just, hey, you're going to listen to orders or whatever. I guess it doesn't really matter. So Volk is a one-man army anyways. He's the main character. Like, come on. Volk starts to have it, like, he has a strategy ready to go. He looked up all the weaknesses of these two. He knows exactly what he's gonna need to do to beat them. So maybe he won't need it, who knows. So they get into the ring, and basically round one starts. It is massively pathetic against the Huntsman Guild. Like, Volk and Zaxxas just obliterate them. It took 29 seconds to win this fight, and they didn't even have to draw swords. Like, Volk didn't even really need his sword.
No, and this goes back to exactly what Zelfry was saying, where the apprentices don't have the skill that the Frithgill has. They haven't been involved in missions in the same way, and you can tell they're not on anywhere near the same tier as the Frithgills.
After this fight was over, and again, in 29 seconds, like, just boom, done. Volk has Luthair take a message and a flower to Livia that's up in the box. And I thought, this is just sweet of him. Like, good for Volk for thinking about this. Like, feeling like Knight's Tale. Of course, because it's Zaxxas, this win goes straight to his head. Like, immediately, he thinks he's the best shit since sliced bread. He's defended Ilya's honor in all a matter of less than 30 seconds.
He is back on his high horse, and I'm not sure he ever got off of it. So
Lyle comes over and meets up, and Lyle basically acts like he's a knight.
Delusions of grandeur just run in this family. Everybody has the highest self-esteem.
And this is all because his friend Corey was down on his luck. He's moonlighting by taking some odd jobs from a pub in the Moonlight District called the Red Pop.
And we find out that he was actually hired not to steal anything during the gala, but just to go in and get a layout of the castle. So you get the feeling that he is a pawn in this broader plan.
Volk and Lyle go over to this Red Pot, this pub, basically. Volk isn't getting any answers out of the innkeeper, and he's getting kind of like upset about it. Volk's getting kind of tired of this. He wants answers. He doesn't have time to play games anymore. He's got a tournament to win. He's got the lovely princess to win over. He's supposed to be training Addy, where at this point he's like trying to figure out which fish he wants from the sea. Like, he's got options here. You know, let's be honest.
He really does. He found himself into a few very, very odd situations that he has benefited from.
Right. I mean, shoot, he could probably even, I don't know, maybe be with Karna even. Like, she was digging him pretty good. Thought he was honorable and was nice, at least.
She didn't kill him, which was what she was planning on doing. So that's a win.
Or frame him for stealing something. I mean,
yeah, he's pretty good in her book.
Yeah, exactly. Volk is not getting the answers he's wanting out of this bartender at the Red Pot. He basically just tells Luther to come over here. I can't remember his exact verbiage, but I think it was to me. And Luther just kind of pops up out of the shadows, and everybody's like, oh, shit, the Steelthorn Inquisitors are looking around. Like, we better give him some actual answers now. Volk does get his answers he's looking for. There's been a shady guy coming in, giving people odd jobs, paying them, no questions asked. A little bit of information from everybody to get all the whole picture for it. And this whole time, Lyle is standing next to Volk. And he's probably like, oh my God, I am besties with the Inquisitor. You guys better respect me and get me some free drinks.
He's taking full advantage of this.
So yeah, like you said, delusions of grandeur must run in the family. In chapter 33, True Forms, now Zaxxas decides that he wants to strategize. Even though the last few days he's just kind of like disappeared with Ilya. Maybe he decided it's not going to be just easy next time. I don't know.
His accountability is a little off. He's very much upset with Volk when he's just as much to blame for their lack of preparation.
It works out for him the first round. Good for them. But the fact that Zaxxas is just like, well, you need to, like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, don't get me wrong. A few weeks ago, you were all over training and all good, this, that, and the other. Cool. But what now? You're all of a sudden you're dating with Ilya and you just can't be found anywhere. What the heck?
And these fights are only going to get harder as teams win, and you never know what the matchup could be. It could be something that is not favorable for them.
But remember, Zaxxas is going to win this tournament for Ilya to show that he's better than Volk. Zaxxas is starting to throw his relationship with Ilya into Volk's face. Like, Volk has a problem with this, which he clearly doesn't. And then the slightest quip, Zaxxas is like, just deal with it, okay? Like, angsty teenagers. Gosh. So Ilya and Hexa get ready to fight. They're coming up against a Salamander Arcanist and a Ogopogo Arcanist, which is basically Canada's version of the Loch Ness Monster. I guess they weren't cool enough to have their own, but I guess it is what it is. Sorry, other people that listen to Canada. Yeah, I guess Scott, you're pretty much on the border there anyways.
We're close. I can go south to Canada, which is an odd one for people.
I always wondered if Vercingetorix grew bored of having to just sit there and roar to announce the beginning of each fight. It's like, I bet it wouldn't be that exciting for him.
There's a lot of fights, too. There's not just the apprentice tournament, but they have the journeyman tournament, the master class. Like, there's a lot of fights going on that he's got to roar for.
He probably figured 5 minutes between bouts at most, and then another 5 minutes to clean up. So, like, every 10 minutes, he's just going, roar.
It would be so frustrating if you weren't actually watching the tournament. And it just, like, you're keeping your shop and just huge siren goes off every 10 minutes.
you work the night shift and you're trying to sleep during the day, and every 10 minutes he's roaring. Like, God dang it. So Ilya pretty much carries the team in this round, basically with Raisin. Unfortunately, Hexa is not too much of a contender in this point, but I guess it is what it is. And after their bout, Volk's kind of, you know, chilling back in the hotel, and he realizes that he doesn't really need to have a flashlight to read his books in the dark anymore. He can sit up and stay awake all night reading his books, and nobody's going to know any better.
That passive ability really just makes him a better student.
Yeah, exactly. He can read later. So he is up reading about true forms, and he's trying to get a better idea of like what they are, how they work kind of thing. One thing that he does discover is that what one thing would work for one Griffin Arcanist to attain true form may actually not work for another Griffin Arcanist. Just because somebody's reached their true form with their Eldrian doesn't mean that that's the exact way it has to be done. Granted, some of the, you know, mystical creatures, they have specific criteria that have to be met. Like, I believe with manticores, it's basically just got to feed them enough eyeballs from kids. Because why not? But if you do it enough, they get their true form. So some of them have that specific criteria, but some of them are vague, like achieving a certain virtue to the extent, like with Guildmaster Eventide, actually, with Gentle. Not everything is going to be the exact same for each Eldrin, even. It can take a very long time to exemplify the virtues. Most true forms are made from older pairs. Those that already exemplify the virtue upon bonding can actually achieve true form immediately from bonding. So that'd be pretty dang cool to not only, one, bond with a mystical creature, but the second you bond with that mystical creature, you get a true form. Like, be heckin' cool.
That's how you know it's the perfect fit for you.
Exactly. Yep. And with true forms, they can actually heal themselves from magical damage as well, and they cannot be tainted or corrupted by the arcane plague.
And they do also move up half of a tier in Thiessen's book, so all their magic is just a little bit stronger. They are just a little bit tougher and more able than their non-true form counterparts.
So as Volk keeps reading, he finds the dread form front in Thiessen's book, and basically dread form is that of a beast that has changed form due to magical corruption of the arcane plague.
And I think we see this in some of the previous books with the gargoyle, who mentions that he's a true embodiment of magic. And I think there was some confusion because Volk says obviously this isn't a true form, but it is what Thiessen is calling the dread form.
Kind of the pendulum swinging in the complete opposite direction. As he's reading, somebody knocks on the door. He goes over, and lo and behold, it is Addy. And I bet Volk is just over the moon that Addy decided to come over and visit him. Probably hasn't seen her much lately, especially after the gala. Volk gives Addy the book about true forms because he remembers her talking about wanting a true form or trying to achieve it. So figure any kind of information additionally that she can have to help her and Titania reach true form. Volk actually was like, wait a minute, you came and knocked on my door. What did you need from me? She wants to train with him a little bit more, but ultimately she's there to inform Volk that the Grandmaster Inquisitor is calling on him.
That leads into chapter 34, the Grandmaster Inquisitor. So as Addy is taking Volk to the Grandmaster, she does compliment him on his growth, and they do agree that they should spend more time together in the future.
Good job, Volk, for taking your own advice. Given Zaxxas all this good advice with Ilya, here we go.
So Volk goes down to meet the Grandmaster, and the Grandmaster, as to be expected, is a Nightmare Arcanist and is merged with his armor. The Grandmaster is a full suit, so fully formed, and Luthair does go in and bow to him. He does know the Grandmaster from his time with Mathis, so bows to show respect.
And even the Grandmaster was happy to see Luthair for sure. He was kind of confused as to why Luthair never came back to the Steelthorn Inquisitors. Luthair was too ashamed after failing to return back to the Steelthorn Inquisitors. I think the Grandmaster kind of understood that.
And the Grandmaster gives a little background once they've had their introductions of why he's there. And he does ask Volk to go on a mission to root out the plague in the mines that we heard about earlier. And as he's given some details, he does let Volk know that there are fewer than 12 Nightmare Arcanists in the world. So it is a very small and almost elite group of Arcanists to be a part of. So he takes a hold of Volk and he does a massive shadow step.
I love the way that they describe it was described in the book. He has this huge inky void for a cape rather than the redlined one. And I wonder if this is something that they're alluding to, or there's just this is just the difference in the nightmares themselves. But Volk kind of like walks into the cape, and this is how he shadow steps.
And they're able to shadow step pretty much out of the city. They are outside the mines, and I'm informed that there's 6 Nightcat and 2 Harpies in the mines that are plague ridden, and that they're going to be responsible for getting rid of. In Volk's experience, based on previously, his thought was, oh, we'll just kill the Eldrin and then the Arcanist will be healed. But he's informed that that's not really the case, and they can't exactly do that right now.
So the Arcanists that have carried the plague for longer than 6 months are actually considered beyond saving at this point. And I believe these Arcanists have been plague ridden for 18 months to 20 months, I believe is what the timeline was. And it's not so much because of the plague itself or spreading the plague. It's because of the actual alteration to their soul. And it basically makes them just completely wicked and a lacking of empathy as to why they're beyond saving. Because they're basically just going to walk around and don't care what they do anymore.
Which makes them extremely dangerous. And my question on this is, how does he know how long they've had the plague from? Is there, can he tell based on disfigurations, or there's some way that he's able to tell?
I mean, I imagine he's got spies somewhere, but I mean, that's a good point.
He's got a way. He's a grandmaster, so.
Exactly.
That brings us to chapter 35, the Eclipse Aura. So the Inquisitor always stages merged, and this is something that Volk asked Luthair about, and even Luthair has never seen them separated. So they are always acting, living and dying as one. We do meet Lucian, who is also a Nightmare Arcanist.
And his nightmare's name is Azir, and he was born from the murder of Emperor Raiz, R-A-I-Z.
So he's very excited to meet another Nightmare Arcanist and kind of get to see all of them in action and maybe learn a few tips and tricks. And the first one that he sees right away is the Grandmaster uses an eclipse aura, which blackens out everything. There's a huge bubble of darkness, and all the nightmares in the area are empowered. So previously, where he had shadow tendrils, those now have chains and hooks. The harpies and the nightcats come out of the mines, and the tears knock the harpies out of the air, so they're much, much stronger. And Volk also notices that when the aura is in effect, he doesn't have any second bonding pain. So all around, there's a few different Nightmare Arcanists in the area, and they're all benefiting from this eclipse aura. They really quickly get rid of everyone. They're able to use their tendrils and not ever get into a point where they're really risking getting the plague. So it's one of the other benefits that they have of the tendrils, the chains, the hooks, is it's all able to be done at a distance. And the it's extremely smart. And the Grandmaster does preach about the importance of the aura for nightmares for this reason. And he actually offers Volk to join the Steelthorn Inquisitors and become his apprentice rather than Zelfreeze. Volk has mixed feelings about this and ends up turning it down. And Lucian is extremely angry at him for it.
Well, I think Lucian is as upset as he is because I feel like Lucian had to prove that he belongs with the Steelthorn Inquisitors. Whether that be like Lucian has to bond with the nightmare. I don't know if they find nightmares and kind of keep them at least with them so that when they do find somebody that would be worthy of bonding with a nightmare. I don't know. I wonder if that's what the guild's trial of worth would be. But again, Lucian's mad because he probably had to go through this intense trial. Volk's just being offered this and Lucian kind of like acts like a straight child. He says to Volk that Volk is such a child to squander such the opportunity, and everyone else had to prove themselves to join the guild, but yet he gets special treatment. And I think that the Grandmaster actually does a good job with this, not because he doesn't get upset or anything like that, but he basically is like, well, when you get done with whatever it is you're doing with the Frith Guild, your offer still remains. I'll let you train under me. So don't think this is one-time only deal.
And I think the Grandmaster almost has respect for the Frith Guild. So he understands if there's something that they are handling that Volk believes is more important, it probably is something that is very important. You know, this Frith Guild is very well known, so it is quite possible that he just respects the guild as a whole. That wraps up this session, so we'll move on to the bestiary. The first one we're going to go through is the Orthrus, and this is one of the puppies that Volk was fighting in the arena, and their magic is really physical strength and nothing else. So they gain extra endurance. They don't need very much sleep. It's tier 2, so it's a slightly lower tier. And their trial of worth really comes from defending animals. So it is another physical strength-based one that you could almost train for, at least knowing, hey, I'm going to have to protect animals. So you have an idea of what's coming. Their reproduction is progeny-based, explicitly mentioned near red cattle. So it sounds like that is their animal of choice to defend. And we don't know much about their evocation, their manipulation, but their augmentation, again, is physical strength related, extra strength, extra endurance. And their passive ability is pretty cool. They're actually immune to mind-affecting powers. And we do get some insight into their true form. It's called the Virtue True Form, and it's obtained by Arcanists who exemplify fealty. And their puppy becomes a bipedal and muscular, much like the Minotaur, and it's capable of brute strength far beyond its size.
There's a Bogrus. It is a tier 2 mystical creature. It has entropic touch that kills living matter, and a howl that can cause deafness the older it gets. Its trial of worth is finding something that's lost. I wonder, is it the same thing that gets lost, or is this something that like is randomly lost?
Almost feels like they would have to find something first and then almost challenge the person to go and find it.
Right. Like obviously like they need to know what's lost.
They need to know that something is lost. They're just out there like, hey, some kid lost something in the forest. Go see if you can find something.
I found a rock. It was lost. The reproduction is fable. They are born from mutilated bodies buried in mountaintops. Pretty solid there. Their evocation, manipulation, augmentation doesn't really say anything, but we can kind of infer their evocation is that they can impact hearing due to their howls impacting deafness. And their manipulation would be at the entropy. We don't know pretty much anything else about it as far as passive abilities or aura goes. But we do know that it does have a true form, which is a virtue. And it turns into a dog made out of dead parts of other dogs. And it's often the size of a horse, perhaps larger. And it's capable of foretelling the likely death of an individual by touching them. And this is typically obtained by Arcanists who revel in the death of lesser creatures. So psychopaths.
Not pretty.
Like, maybe this is what's lost. They lost their empathy.
Lost their sanity.
Yeah, and that concludes this week's bestiary section. Again, we have quite a lot of other mystical creatures we're going to go over. We've got grifter crows, chamrashes, stone golems, the okobogo, or however we say that again. We'll cover those later on in a section where we don't have many other mystical creatures in, so we'll keep them on the back burner for later. We do want to thank everybody for listening today. We also want everybody to remember that we do post a new episode every Wednesday morning around 11 Eastern Standard, which would be 8 o'clock Pacific Standard in the morning. We are on all podcasting platforms and YouTube Music as well, and Google Podcasts, Podbean, all that good stuff. We're on YouTube as well for video. So if you guys want to watch the video rather than listen to it, our editor, Dan, he does a really good job with adding pictures of things, links to all of the different websites that we use. He does make it quite entertaining to watch that as well. If you want to reach out to us, we're on Gmail at frithguildpod@gmail.com or on Facebook or pretty much any other social media at Frith Guild Podcast. And we do also want to thank the Frith Chronicles Wiki as well, again, because they're such a great resource. I know once the bestiary is released, a lot of information is going to be updated. Everything is linked down below in the description section for both podcasts and YouTube. And again, 2 weeks, the second book in the Crown Tournament series will be coming out. It's titled Crown Tournament 2. And Scott, did you have anything else you'd like to add today?
Just excited to see some more tourney bouts.
Yeah, I think next section we get another couple chapters of the tournament. So super excited for that. And all right, stay tuned and we'll talk to you next time.